topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Churchill said, "Those who fail to learn from history are condemned to repeat it." Kevin Hallinan believes that certainly applies to business. Welcome to Winning Business Radio here at W4CY Radio. That's W4CY.com. And now, your host, Kevin Hallinan.
Happy New Year and welcome back to Winning Business Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Hallinan. The mission of Winning Business Radio, as regular listeners know, is to really offer insights and advice to help listeners avoid the mistakes of others, to learn best practices, right? The how-tos, the what-tos. I say this every week. The what-not-tos, to be challenged and then certainly and hopefully to be inspired by the successes of others. Every successful person that I've ever had a chance to talk to has had some form of failure in their lives and careers. So while we all have to get our knees skinned once in a while, I'm driven to keep those scrapes from needing major surgery. Let's endeavor to learn from history so we don't repeat it. Today, my guest is Marcia Mantel, blogger, principal of Mantel Retirement Consulting Incorporated, and author of What's the Deal with Social Security for Women? She's also a sought-after speaker for corporate and civic events and covers financial topics dealing with baby boomers. I'm going to read her bio. It's a little lengthy, but it's worth it. For nearly 25 years, Marcia Mantel has helped the country's foremost financial services firms and advisors increase their knowledge of complex retirement concepts and regulations while expanding and growing their businesses. As Vice President of Retirement at Fidelity Investments, she was responsible for developing programs to encourage baby boomers to save for their future in IRAs and small business retirement plans. As founder and president of Mantel Retirement Consulting, Inc., she partners with financial institutions in the U.S. and Canada to help them support their customers across the retirement spectrum, from a focus on savings to the transition into retirement, as well as how to organize and manage income to last a lifetime. Marcia has developed innovative retirement income planning workshops and programs for advisors and their clients, comprehensive retirement education programs and seminars for consumers, and money basics workshops to help high school students and young adults start out on solid financial footing. She's written extensively about retirement topics in white papers, web content, brochures, seminars, and webinars. Marcia has a remarkable ability, we'll find out, just kidding. Marcia has a remarkable ability to translate challenging retirement concepts into everyday language that educates and motivates people to take the right steps to achieve the retirement they deserve. She's the author of her first book, What's the Deal with Retirement Planning for Women? In this thought-provoking but non-traditional, fun approach to planning for a woman's retirement, she guides readers through key questions they'll need to answer well before they retire. It's a short, snappy book written to get women into the game. Don't abdicate, participate is a key theme. Marcia frequently interviews boomers and shares their stories in her blog at boomerretirementbriefs.com. It offers a lighthearted look at how baby boomers from the youngest still in their 50s, oh, that's great, awesome, we're young, to the oldest nearing 70, who are reshaping and in reinvesting for retirement. Marcia stays up to date on the latest government legislation and regulations that impact retirement policies, Social Security, and Medicare, bringing an impressive amount of knowledge along with her signature enthusiasm and energy to people working hard to achieve their retirement goals. She's often interviewed by the press, including Investment News, Consumer Reports Money Advisor, The Wall Street Journal, Bankrate, Think Advisor, Market Watch's Retirement Weekly, and was profiled in Research Magazine and Advisor Magazine. She's also participated in a number of radio interviews and webinar events. She's a graduate of the University of Rochester and earned the Retirement Management Analysis RMA designation, an advanced curriculum for retirement income specialists. She's an active member of the Retirement Industry Association, Retirement Income Industry Association, RIIA, where she heads up consumer initiatives. Last paragraph. She and her husband, Dan, raised two daughters in the suburbs of Boston, teaching them from a young age how important it is to save for their retirement and to build financial independence. Katie is 28 and Lindsay is 23. Marcia and Dan have recently partially downsized, as they say, and live on Boston's South Shore. She's an active member of her community and serves on the boards of a number of organizations. I thought about shortening that bio, Marcia, but I really wanted people to hear that depth. So welcome to Winning Business Radio.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin. And wow, yeah, I forgot all those things in there. So thank you for the reminder.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So I like listeners to learn about a guest's background. So let's talk about that for a few minutes. I know you grew up in upstate New York. Tell us about that.
Well, sure. I was born in Binghamton, New York, and in the Southern Tier. And my dad was an accountant, and he worked for Corning Glass Works, that I'm sure many of your listeners know about. Sure. And he had his career as it started to advance. That meant we moved. So I attended, I think it was 8 different schools from after first grade, and spent 3 years in Harrodsburg, Kentucky, a small little town in the bluegrass region of Kentucky, and a couple of years in Virginia, Danville, Virginia, and then back to upstate New York, where I graduated from Corning East High School, and then on to the University of Rochester. So it was a great experience growing up. You know, you were always the new kid. That was horrible. But it turns out that's really a skill you need. That's a life skill, you know, and it's something that has carried me forward in ways that it was not my parents' grand plan. It's like, you know, let's make our kids, you know, jump into the deep end. It just happened. And it's been a very positive thing for my brother and sister and myself.
Yeah, I can imagine that is, you know, it versus, you know, we talked earlier today in our pre-call that I grew up in Medfield. By the way, there was a Corning Glass in Medfield growing up.
Oh my
I don't
gosh.
Think they're there anymore, but there was a pretty big office and plant area.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, right off the downtown.
Okay.
But we were, you know, I mean, I didn't go anywhere. I mean, I went on Boy Scout trips and we had a Winnebago and we traveled quite a bit on the weekends sometimes, but otherwise, you know, we were in Medfield. It was a small town and I can see the benefits being a networking adult, right? A business person who networks a lot. If young people can learn how to do that at an early age. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It really was. It was hard going through it, but what a value now. It's great. And we've encouraged our kids. We stayed in the same place in Needham, Mass. We raised both our girls there. And I wanted that, you know, I wanted that anchor, those roots or whatever. But what it gave my children was an avenue to explore.
Yeah.
So they've both gone far away to college and they've been to places like Ghana and Mongolia Iceland. My younger daughter, Lindsay, did a 10-day backpacking trip through Iceland.
Wow.
So, you know, different strokes with different generations, but still that same idea of try something new.
Yeah. Get out there outside of your comfort zone and meet people. And, so, you have a science degree. I want to talk to you about that in a minute. But what were your early interests?
Music. It was all about music for me.
Okay.
I started playing the flute when I was, I don't know, 4th or 5th grade, whatever it was, and quickly got bored with the flute. So then I got to play the piccolo, which I loved. And I marched in the 100th running of the Kentucky Derby parade.
Oh, that is so cool.
The piccolo. Yeah, that was just great. I loved marching band and loved jazz band. But after mastering flute and piccolo, you know, for whatever a middle schooler can master, I moved on to trumpet.
There you go. That's me.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yep.
I noticed that music stand in your studio there.
Yep.
And
I still play.
Do you really?
I do.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, mine was a freshman in college, and after that, I haven't played. But again, it's one of those amazing life skills, and we pass that along to the children as well. Yeah. They both played, my little one, clarinet and oboe, or flute and oboe. My older one played the trumpet. So
that's awesome.
It's great.
And I was going to ask you about this earlier, Boston Youth Symphony Orchestra, either one or both the girls were involved?
No, neither of the kids.
Oh, really?
No, Well, they went through, and Needham has a wonderful music program, so they were involved in the music there. But I got involved about 6 years ago and was invited to be on a newly formed council. It's a working council where we help the staff with their goals and objectives, and trying to, you know, run a not-for-profit is a big endeavor when you have 360 children from about third grade all the way up through senior year in high school. It's a lot to manage. So I'm on this council and work with the wonderful BYSO and the children there who just, you cannot believe there are a youth orchestra playing this really fancy pants music.
So I had a high school buddy. My closest friend in high school was a cellist. He played trumpet in with me in high school. He was way better than me, but he was in the stage band. He was in everything that there was, including chorus. We were in chorus together, chorus and special chorus and stage band. He just practiced way more than me, right? He played the cello even better than the trumpet, and he was in BYSO.
Oh my gosh, that's wonderful.
So a quick story, I'll tell you about me just for a second. This is not about me, it's about you, but you'll get a kick out of it. I'm a proud alumnus of the UMass Minuteman Marching Band. Woo-hoo. And go Minutemen. And we marched, there were four of us that were in two units in the same parade. The Holyoke, which is a big St. Patrick's Day parade, one year we marched in that parade in two units. I'm pretty sure it was the UMass band first. Then they stuck us in a van, raced us to the, you know, from the finish to back to the start in time for the second unit, which was the Rhode Island Matadors Drum and Bugle Corps. We changed uniforms en route, marched the second time. That's a long parade too.
That's a great story.
Yeah, it was fun.
I rarely meet other marching band aficionados, so I'm
one
thrilled.
Time, at band camp? No. That's for Shep Becker, by the way. So tell me about the science degree. What made you pursue a degree in science?
Well, I loved science in particular. Math, not so much, but loved science and chemistry in particular in high school. Yeah. And I had this really amazing, you know, I think like so many of us, this amazing chemistry teacher, Mrs. Moran. And she was just sort of inspirational. She did both this chemistry and, you know, taught a bunch of gangly, uninterested teenagers chemistry, but she also supported, in upstate New York, there's a lot of farming country up there, and there were migrant workers, and she was the one who would coordinate like these big book drives to take to the migrant kids,
and we
would read with them and, you know, and see what life was like on the other side, you know, when you think you don't have, just look a little harder. And she was just very, I guess, partly inspirational for me. So anyway, I thought I'd pick chemistry because the University of Rochester, while they have the amazing Eastman School of Music, I was not that talented. So, you know, going into music was not meant to be. But I tried chemistry, did not love it, it turns out, when it gets to be high-powered chemistry. And
Talk about math.
Yes, because it was also chemical engineering. So when you're a chemical engineering major, any engineering major at Rochester, which is very fine academic program.
Right, demanding.
Very demanding. You also have to take electives, but those electives had to be science. So it doesn't give you this back then, you know, this is already 35 years ago. I took geology as my electives because I did not want more engineering. And that turned out to be pretty interesting. So I love history, and it was the history of the earth. I mean, I didn't expect to study that, but it was, college is supposed to open your eyes to new things. And so I took advantage of that. And so it was, you know, it was a period in time. I was never a geologist. I did not use the degree or any work in particular. But it was very eye-opening, and I have quite a respect for the Mother Earth, if you will.
That's cool. So the two electives that you just reminded me of, I don't think about these a lot, and they were recommended because I was an electrical engineering major, so it was a heavy course load.
Yes.
One was art appreciation, which was what they call that
art history.
Yeah, it was an art history. That was just a lot of memorizing. of photos and names and dates. I mean, of photos, of pictures, names and dates, art.
Yeah.
And the other was Rocks for Jocks, Geology 101. I was not a jock back then, but.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, they do, they called it that, you know, we're the same era. So yeah, it was Rocks for Jocks. And only the first class is that. After that, it gets pretty darn serious and a lot of math and physics. It's like they kept, it was a recurring theme. So it's like, oh man, when am I going to get rid of this math and physics? So yeah, it was impressive.
So we're really going to get on to, for listeners, we really are going to get into Social Security for Women, but there's a listener question. Missy said, is music a good thing to go into in this day and age?
Oh, isn't that an opinion of mine?
What'd you say?
I think music is pretty much the most critical course students can take in elementary through high school.
Yeah.
Music, there's all kinds of research and theories and proof points and so forth about why music is so important to the development of the brain, development of your thinking, your logic, and all of that.
Yeah.
Which is all well and good. I'm super happy about that. But it's for the passion.
Yeah.
I think our kids, I don't know how passionate you can be about video games, but they are. And my younger daughter, who is quite a video game guru, talks about the music and the unbelievable scores that been written in video games. It's like, really? Mario Kart has symphonies? Like, no, Mom, not that one. Zelda. So,
no, there are video game composers. There are video game. I mean, it's incredible. It really is. Yeah.
It is absolutely incredible. So I always think there's not room for, but must have time for music. You could go art. I'm good with the other way as well. Music does something different. It works in your brain differently, but that's as critical as
math. And it connects with your heart and soul too. I mean,
yes, it does.
Just does. It
that's
just does.
That's the passion. Right.
Hey, we're going to take our first break right here. It's 15 after the hour. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Marcia Mantel.
You're listening to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan on W4CY Radio. That's W4CY.com. Don't go away. More helpful information is coming right up, right here on Winning Business Radio.
Be seen, be heard on the internet's number one ranked radio station right here in West Palm Beach. What a way for your business to have a voice. Now is the time to advertise your business on W4CY.com. Call 561-506-4031 for a deal you won't refuse. Again, that's 561-506-4031. Don't wait, call now.
Have you ever dreamt of being on the radio? Well, now is your chance. Be a radio show guest on the number one ranked internet radio station and promote you and your business for free. Yes, you heard it, free. Business advertising right here on W4CY.com. Call 561-506-4031 now to get booked on one of our shows. That's 561-506-4031. Get your free advertising now.
Hi, this is Ian Hill, and you're listening to W4CY Radio.
You can tell what's wrong with a car just by sitting next to it at a red light. You can tear down a big block engine in 26 minutes. You know cars. We can help you find more of them to work on. And together, we can get your small business moving in the right direction. At AT&T Advertising Solutions, we have more ways to reach more people. With print, online, mobile, and direct marketing, AT&T Advertising Solutions has local advertising experts to help your small business find more customers. Call 1-800-GET-REAL to learn more. AT&T, rethink possible.
And now back to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan, presenting exciting topics and expert guests with one goal in mind, to help you succeed in business. Here once again is Kevin Hallinan.
We're back with Marcia Mantel, blogger, principal of Mantel Retirement Consulting, Inc., and author of What's the Deal with Social Security for Women? So I promise we will get to Social Security for Women. But I noticed that your first or one of your early jobs out of college, was it's a company I've always been for some reason, I guess I'm weird, been fascinated with Finger Hut.
Oh, you saw Finger Hut, huh?
I did. That's a catalog company, right?
It is from the back in the day.
Yeah.
Finger Hut was the largest catalog company in the country. Maybe Sears Roebuck was bigger, but as an independent, you know, no brick and mortar stores, back in the mid 80s. And I got a job, you know, it's so interesting when I talk to students at Bentley University, I often have been invited to teach one or to lecture on one class. And I talk about retirement and small business and such with these students, but they're all professional. They're gearing themselves, coming out as accountants or financial planners, and so like they're and you can see it in their eyes. They just know they're on this very straight path. And so I'm the one who goes in there and sort of bursts their bubble and says, you know, kids, life is not always quite that straight line you think it is right now.
Exactly.
And back in the 80s, you know, my generation, your generation, is the first where women en masse went to college.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. We went to college. We didn't go to college to be a lawyer. We didn't go to college to be an accountant. He just went to college because that's what you did after high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so then after college, what do? Well, you get a job. Like I find that we just didn't overthink this stuff. And so the job, I opened the newspaper. I was living in Minneapolis. My husband was in grad school. And I needed a job. So I opened the paper and there was an ad for Finger Hut. It's like, okay, I was taking a marketing class at the time. That name had come up. It was a big employer.
Big employer,
just,
yeah.
Yeah, just west of Minneapolis. And so I got a job there. And for 3 months, I was a on-the-phone sales rep, I think is what it was called. Mm-hmm. And we would sell add-on products to people who had purchased, you know, like bath towels. We would then call them, do you need sheets? That sort of cross-selling.
Yep.
You know, pre-technology. This
great
was just
experience.
It was.
This is probably a very loose analogy, but I see it's like the brick and mortar, old school phone and catalog Amazon.
Well, exactly. And it's funny because, maybe not so funny. Finger Hut tried at one point. I was just leaving in about 1987 when we were relocating to Boston. And there was this idea that maybe they could put catalogs on TV and
it'll never work.
It'll never work. They tried and it failed very quickly, went
really?
Back to catalogs.
Yeah.
And then what happened? QVC and all the, you know, online shopping networks and such. And now we have Amazon.
It's
amazing. The journey, the evolution of it all. So yeah, that was my Finger Hut stint.
There you go. So how did you get interested in and begin working? And you worked at Fidelity in financial services.
Well, it was that same philosophy where you need a job. It's really simple, I think, when you have a mortgage, you need to pay it.
There you go.
You need a job.
Right.
Or as my dad once advised both Dan and me, you should have married for money. Well, we'd already been long married and neither of us apparently married for money. So you got a job. And I stayed in at Finger Hut where it started. I ended up 3 months in that call center and then I went to their marketing. And so I learned all about direct mail marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So when I moved here to the Boston area, I got a job in direct mail marketing that led me to Fidelity. And Fidelity has an in-house ad agency. And they needed direct mail expertise. So I interviewed for a job and I was hired on the spot. So I joined the Fidelity ad agency back in 1992. My new daughter had just turned one, and I got to make this leap from strict catalog business to an ad agency where they were doing direct mail marketing about retirement, this new industry that was just in its nascent coming together. And it's what we know today as the retirement industry.
Quick, funny little joke. It's only at parents. It's only a joke. But I tell my daughters, marry for love. Marry for money. You can always learn to love. Just a joke. Okay.
That's what my dad said. I think it's a dad thing.
listener question. Pearl says, did you say they have work in the corporate offices of Finger Hut? So I'm not sure you still know the answer to that, but I think they're asking.
No idea.
Is there opportunity there?
I don't know. I have seen Fingerhut pop up. I saw a TV commercial for it, but I have no idea what their structure's like. They were bought and sold many times over from the late 80s, and I did not keep up with that company. So, no, I don't know.
I would imagine, especially in this market, that they do have opportunities.
Yeah.
All right. So you worked at Fidelity for a while. That's cool that you worked on the marketing side.
Yes.
But you worked there for a number of years. In 2005, you founded Mantell Retirement Consulting. So I'll put you on the spot a little. Give us your 30-second commercial. Tell us about what Mantell Retirement Consulting is and does.
Mantell Retirement Consulting is a solo owner business, Marcia Mantell, and I help the giant financial services firms around the country build a better or an expanded retirement business. So it can come in the shape and form of I may be helping them on their 401k business. How can we help more consumers save more for retirement? It could be on the retail business. How do small business owners and regular people fund IRAs successfully? And then how do you transition out of that savings mode into creating a paycheck for yourself successfully when you're in retirement?
So the clients, if I heard you correctly, the clients are more other firms versus individuals?
Correct. Work on all what we would call in the industry as the institutional business model. So big home offices at a bank or a mutual fund company or a brokerage house or an insurance company. Those are my clients. So I'm quite nimble and flexible. I have a breadth of functional work that I can do along the marketing, content creation, developing programs that a large company would then use for their advisors or their representatives that then go to the consumer. So it is I look at the revenue side of my business is from the financial institutions.
I have a couple more listener questions. There's a little bit of lag time sometimes, but George said, what background school-wise do you need for these types of jobs? And I think he meant Fingerhut and those types. My opinion would be communications, marketing, anything like that, business management or?
Yeah, you can do any of those or, geology and chemical engineering.
Well, case in point, right?
Right. It really is your willingness to work. It's a work ethic. It's willing to learn new things, be a good team player. Be collaborative. In general, I would say most of the jobs like with financial services, and if you're looking for what I'll call a home office job, a corporate job, you do need some level of college education.
But for a lot of those jobs, I think you're right.
But the specific major is less important than what I found it to be less important than going out there and why would you be a good fit for that company? Why will you do a good job at that job? Mm-hmm. And how willing are you to learn?
Good answer. Two more. Ann said, this is a layup. When should people start planning for retirement?
When you're 20.
Or if you haven't, now.
Today's good. Yes, today's good. Excellent day.
Yeah, 20s. I mean, if a 20-year-old puts, $2,000 away every year, which is not a lot, they're going to retire a millionaire.
Yes, they will. And a little sidebar with that, one of the things that my husband and I do, and we started now 6 years ago, when the kids left for college, we didn't have that day-to-day contact anymore. And we want them to go and be successful and such, but they come home for Christmas time. So one of the things I started was a tea party, like a English tea at our dining room table with an agenda, and it's called Family Finance Fun.
Oh, I love it.
And we sit down, we just had it the other day before they went back to Minnesota, where they're both in school and working. They love this, and it's not an hour. We spend the afternoon talking about a money topic. Wow. This year it was about mortgages. Other years it's been about insurance. Other years it's about our family philosophy about money. And it's always about retirement. That always
These daughters have a lot of patience, but they probably get a lot out of it.
They do. And they ask for it.
Yeah, that's so cool.
What's the topic? And we asked them this year, you want to talk about mortgages versus renting? Because they rent out in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And said, we'd like to know more about what's this mortgage idea? Why do people want to tie up their money? So, but it's never too early to be thinking about and doing, saving for retirement, no matter how much or how little you can do.
Yeah, agreed. So Greg has a question, and this is a big question. See if you can keep this as simple as possible because I want to get into the meat. How can you plan for retirement?
It's all about writing down how much you spend versus how much income you have coming in. Mm-hmm. It's not hard, but nobody likes to do it. But you need to see it on paper. People often ask, you know, should I be using an online tool? I'm not a fan. I think it removes the tangibility of you with your money. And the more tangible you can make things until you get a discipline going, you need that, set up a spreadsheet, write it down, and then engage with your money. Dan and I were extremely poor when we got married. I mean, really poor. He was in grad school. I was still in school.
Yeah, that's poor.
And Friday night, Dan had to be in lab, and I made it finance night. That is not your typical Friday night.
Woohoo.
But it set up a discipline that we have till this day of being in touch with our money. It was not something out there, you know, in an account or, well, you know, the internet wasn't invented, so that wasn't a distraction.
Right.
But you really had to know where every penny was. And it sets up discipline. It's discipline and desire.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. All right, let's talk about the firm. Why did you start the firm?
Well, the simple answer is corporate America is amazing in many ways.
Yeah.
But when you're a mom, it's not so amazing. And back then, 2005, when I stepped off, the market was roaring. Everything was up. My peers thought I was insane. Like, you're leaving this job and the benefits and the pay. It's like, yeah, because my older daughter was starting high school. Younger daughter was going into fourth grade.
Yeah, you had an an 8-year-old and a 13-year-old.
Yes, exactly right. And they weren't getting any younger. So I needed to be able to carve out those hours from 2 to 5 sporadically. Didn't need them every day, just when they needed it. And corporate America cannot accommodate that kind of schedule. And at that time, there was not much flexibility without a lot of you were really disincented to try things like, there was no working at home then.
Right.
There was, you know, very little on the technology front. So I wanted something different and I wanted to see my kids. So it was a bold move, I would say.
Yeah.
Some would say reckless. I didn't really think twice about it. I gave my notice on Valentine's Day. And then I called Dan to let him know that I did officially quit my job. And he goes, really? On Valentine's Day?
You said, I did it for you, honey.
I did. It's kind of, yeah, it's like, did you get me flowers? And he goes, no, we don't have any money anymore. but sometimes you have to make decisions that don't necessarily make sense to anyone else, but they have to make sense to you.
Yeah.
And I knew I could never get these years back with my kids. Never. Once Katie had 4 more years, and you know, you have kids, they start high school on like Tuesday and they graduate on Friday.
Exactly.
You know, it goes so fast. So, I'm forever grateful that I made that step. But I also did it. Fidelity is very generous, and many companies are, particularly in financial services. There were bonuses paid out over the years. And I banked my bonuses for several years, knowing that I probably wouldn't be there forever, and I needed an escape plan. We now call it the Marcia Freedom Fund. I needed a freedom fund so that I could leave if I needed to, and my children wouldn't starve.
That's
and
awesome.
That was the key for us. You know, it doesn't work for everyone, but I found that was just so critical that I had that flexibility. And to us, that's what money is. It does put food on the table, and it lets you have flexibility.
We're going to take another break in a second, but that also is discipline. You said it was bonus money. You didn't need, quote unquote, that money, right? That was bonus money. It wasn't your regular paycheck.
No, and we lived
within discipline in putting that away. That's fantastic. All right, we're going to take our second break right here. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Marcia Mantel.
You're
listening to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan on W4CY Radio. That's W4CY.com. Don't go away. More helpful information is coming right up, right here on Winning Business Radio.
Have you ever dreamed of having your own radio show? Well, W4CY Radio makes dreams come true. You can be a radio personality on the number one ranked internet radio station in West Palm Beach, Florida. We can be heard in 105 countries in all U.S. states. Promote your business. Earn up to $10,000 per month and more. It's all up to you. Have fun and be heard. Call 561-506-4031. That's 561-506-4031. Start your radio show now.
This is Felix Griffin, drummer for MOD Classic. You're listening to W4CY Radio. Thank you so much.
Is your pet overweight? Suffer from itchy skin and coat problems? Showing signs of food allergies? Then do your pet a favor. Stop by Fiesta Pet Deli, South Florida's original and only fresh food deli for pets. Prepared daily and FDA approved with products like Bravo, Nature's Variety, and BioComplete. Listen, dogs and cats are carnivores. 90% of their diet should be meat. That dry kibble you put in their bowl every day contains less than half of what their bodies require. Veterinarian owned and operated, Fiesta Pet Deli has one mission: to get your pet as healthy as possible. Give them a call today at 954-971-2500 or come check out their new store at the Festival Flea Marketplace at Sample Road in the Turnpike in Pompano, Florida. They also offer free local delivery, shipping throughout the United States. Check out their website at www.realfoodforpets.com or just Google Fiesta Pet Deli. If you truly love your pet and care about their health, stop by Fiesta Pet Deli. Call today at 954-971-2500.
Hi, this is Lindsay Schoolcraft of Cradle of Filth, and you're listening to W4CY Radio.
And now back to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan, presenting exciting topics and expert guests with one goal in mind: to help you succeed in business. Here once again is Kevin Hallinan.
We're back again with Marcia Mantel, blogger, principal of Mantel Retirement Consulting, Inc., and author of What's the Deal with Social Security for Women? We're going to get into that in a moment. But I wanted to ask, if it's been almost 15 years since you started the firm. What prepared you? I have two key questions. What do you think best prepared you to start and lead the company?
For me, the best preparation someone like me could have were those years in corporate America. It was looking at, and I somehow always looked at this as every time I learned a new skill, I was filling my tool bag.
Yeah.
I didn't know why. You know, at the time, it was just, I had this approach that when a manager asked you to do something or anyone higher up, even though you didn't have time, you didn't have the expertise, you didn't know how to do it, you said yes. And that over the years, you figured out, oh, my tool bag is getting very full.
Yeah.
And that's how you learn all these new things. And I'm not sure, well, actually, I know from the peer group of my era, most people didn't say yes. Like, oh, I'm too busy, or no, that's not really part of my job.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't part of my job either, but you didn't know where it was going to lead. So fill your tool bag and say yes. I think those are the two things that really prepared me unknowingly. You know, I never set out to have my own business. This was not a dream, but it did prepare me very well.
While you were playing the piccolo, you weren't thinking, I can't wait to get in my own.
My own business. That's right.
What has been one of your biggest challenges thus far?
Well, I have two that I continue to grapple with, but always try to improve. One is when you are a solo business person, you have your time. That's what you have to offer. You have your expertise and your time, but overscheduling seems to be a problem. Sometimes it's a big opportunity, so you know you don't want to say no. Other times it's a former client who calls, like, oh, we'd love to have you back to do something new. you know, so you go back to say yes. You'll figure out how to manage it all. But you definitely, I work way more hours as a small business owner than I ever did with those long hours in corporate America.
But it's so different, isn't it?
It is very different. And it's a thrill. Right. For the most part. So over scheduling time, that's a challenge. But the one that I grapple with the most these days is social media. You have to be in social media. And I actually I love Twitter. I just have a ball playing on Twitter. I tweet out a lot about the Minnesota Golden Gopher football team.
Sure.
That I just love, and the marching band. But everybody thinks social media is so easy. Well, you know, maybe it's easy when you're just tweeting out about your kids or, you know, what you had for dinner. But when you do it as a business person, there's an unbelievable discipline that you just have to embrace. It takes me a long time to write the blog posts, even though I only do one a month. I interview people. I then write it, rewrite it. Then you have to make SEO work, search engine optimization. It's hours and hours to do one post. And then you have to distribute it, and you have to learn all these different platforms. And they're not so easy. So I love having my millennial children when I'm really in a bind. It has not been
called tech support.
Call. Yes, indeed. And mom will send you cookies. Yeah.
That's funny. All right. Let's get into, I know you have passion about this, the book, What's the Deal with Social Security for Women? What I want to take a deep dive into that. As you do, the book is a deep dive into the most, as you say, one of the most misunderstood retirement income resources for women. But first, why did you write it?
Thank you for asking. I wrote this book because I've had amazing opportunities to go around the country with different clients and present the concept, how the program works to big audiences of men and women. And it's inevitable that during the open Q&A session, the men raise their hands, and the men always have lots of questions about Social Security. The women wait until after we're done, and they wait in line up to an hour to whisper their questions to me.
Isn't they that interesting?
It is absolutely fascinating. They don't have a handle on this. What is every woman know? Every woman knows you grab and go at 62. You can get your Social Security, and man, they are counting down the days. Yeah. One lady had a countdown clock on her phone, her countdown till retirement. It was hilarious.
But you think that's a mistake, right?
Well, it depends what day they're counting down till.
Okay.
If it's to 62, for the most part, if you're otherwise healthy and you can work or you have other income means, you know, you married rich, you do not need to.
And you learn to love, right?
Right. That came later, but it came. Claiming at 62 is a critical decision. You're making a decision about what for most women will ultimately be their largest source of income in their 80s and 90s. And they've locked themselves into the lowest possible monthly amount. And that sometimes you have to do it. Like there are cases where that you're just absolutely necessary. But you need to understand, and what I wanted to do with this book and why I wrote it was I wanted women to understand that this is a financial decision that they are making. They control it, they own it, and they have to live with the consequences.
So you can't fix it after, can you?
Well, you can't. Yeah. There are two little situations where you can undo, but you have to pay all the money back. Well, that doesn't work for most people.
Yeah.
So, and also with our generation, with the boomers, largely we're all married. Now, it's not exactly true, but the large percentage of boomers are still married or remarried. And there are lots of rules that go with being married or remarried or divorced or widowed. And the women had no idea. They did not, at-home moms had no idea they were entitled to a benefit. And they said, but I never worked. You know, well, yeah, you did, first of all. You worked harder than I did because you were a mom.
For sure.
And second of all, you were part of the economic success of your household. And Social Security recognizes that. So you, too, get a benefit. I didn't know that. You know, divorced women, they can claim on their ex if they get a larger benefit on that ex. They didn't know that. So this amount, the amount of not knowing is quite stunning out there. So I looked around for books. Now, I have found a lot of really excellent Social Security books. If you need to train professionals, it's the nuts and bolts and the nitty-gritty of how the program works and how all the right. calculations work the actuaries are doing. Well, that's not for regular people. So there was no book out there, no resource for women to start to be able to apply the concepts and the math to their personal situation. So that's the approach I took in the book, was writing real women's stories. These were interviews with real women, or it was a question that I got at a seminar from two or three women who, when they come up and whisper, they all listen to what each other's saying anyway. So then it becomes a little group, you know, four or five of us talking. And it's just fascinating how much they didn't know, how hungry women are for this information. And they didn't feel they had anywhere to go. So I wanted to be part of the solution.
That's really cool. So give a scenario, if you could, when, and this is not investment advice, we'll say that, right? But just a scenario when it might make sense to start drawing that at 62, or it might make sense to wait till, I don't know, 65.
Sure. The first thing that's important to know, each of us has an age. It's called your FRA, or full retirement age. Mm-hmm. And that's, I call it the anchor. So for me, it's, and for you, it's age 67. So you're born in 1960 or later, 67 is your full retirement age. Social Security will calculate your optimal benefit at that point. And they tell you, it's right on your statement. It's $2,000 a month, let's say.
Yep.
If you have to draw early, so that is any month before your full retirement age month, you will get dinged. You lock in a permanent penalty, meaning a lot less money. Mm-hmm. So if you need to draw at 62, it typically would be for health reasons. You can the stress of the job it is literally killing you. You need to be out of the job, and you don't have any or sufficient enough other income to support your putting food on the table. Mm-hmm. In that case, you have to. There are also some situations where, with married couples, if the husband is a lot older, let's say, but they both want to retire together. Okay. He's waited to claim, let's say, until his full retirement age of 67, or he's waited longer, and then she jumps in at 62. Great. Okay. That could work in that strategy.
Got it.
I'm also not a huge fan of waiting all the way till age 70. Now, age 70 is when you maximize your payments, and you've been getting, between your full retirement age and age 70, 8% per year bonus money. Well, that's great if you're continuing.
Does that compound, or is it just a...
It's a straight line.
Straight line. Okay.
Straight line. Yep. And now there are cost of living adjustments that also get built in, but you can get a lot more monthly income. Again, Social Security shows you that on the statement that you can get right at socialsecurity.gov.
Good. I was just going to ask that. Socialsecurity.gov. Good.
Yeah. And it's a wonderful website, and you sign up for your own account. You get your current Social Security statement. So this age 70 number is really impressive for many of us. It's 24% higher monthly income. That's a lot more.
Wow.
However, to wait until age 70, if you're not working or not independently wealthy, then you're chewing up your retirement savings, and that might not be the best strategy. So you really need to put a retirement income plan together first to decide, can you really afford to draw at 62 or 63 or 64, or should you wait until 70? You know, what should you do? When is the best time for you to create income with Social Security as your foundation and make sure all of your other assets can last well into your 90s? Mm. As for most of us, that's how long we're living.
Yeah, I saw a really good but unexpected statistic. 25% of women will see their late 90s.
Late 90s, yes. Mm. There was just an article the other day I heard on the radio somewhere that the oldest woman, I think she's in Japan, turned 117.
Wow.
So
hope she had good retirement or
I hope
family.
So, good pension in Japan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
we will live a long time.
By the way, Kenny asked, will this book answer these questions?
It will, indeed. And I'm glad that, I'm assuming Kenny is a gentleman. Even though the book is called What's the Deal with Retirement Planning for Women, it is a book for everyone. The stories and the perspective is from a woman to women and about women, but especially if you're a husband or an ex-husband, mm-hmm. you're critical in this mix, because the decisions you make about when you claim, if you're a husband, it will reflect on your wife's Social Security security, her financial security, if you're the first one to die, because she will step into your shoes and get the higher benefit.
So the easiest place to get the book is Amazon?
Amazon and on barnesandnoble.com, yes.
Okay. And the title one more time.
What's the deal with Social Security for Women?
Awesome. We are almost out of time. I have a couple of more questions here. I wrote so many questions, but I want to just point to, where is it? Oh, there are lots of different strategies if you're married, divorced, widowed, singled, etc., right?
Yes, there are. But each, I look at them as swim lanes. So you're you're married. So you have a certain set of rules, and there are strategies to consider married. Divorced folks have a different set. Widows and widowers, a different set. And single is you meet none of the other. Okay. So it's, if you're truly just, you've never been married or married for 10 years or less, then you have a different set of considerations. And mainly, if you're truly and just an individual, you rely on yourself exclusively for your retirement paycheck. Yeah. So making really good decisions is really super important.
Hey, really quick question, because we gotta be done. Anne said, will women get the husband's money first, then her own, or does she get them both at once?
No, she does not get both. You only get one benefit at a time, and it's the highest one which you're eligible.
Perfect. Hey, how can people best get in touch with you? We know the book. We want everybody to buy it on Amazon, but how do people reach out if they've got questions?
BoomerRetirementBriefs.com. If you go to the blog, there's an email, Marcia, and connect with me on LinkedIn or Facebook. I also have a Boomer Retirement Briefs page.
Good. BoomerRetirementBriefs.com. Check it out. Marcia, thank you so much for being here. I'm sorry the time flew. We were having fun, right?
We were, Kevin. Thank you. This has been a real treat.
Oh, you got it. And thanks, everybody, for listening. This is a show about business and business challenges. If you've got concerns about the growth of your company, feel free to reach out to me on Facebook or LinkedIn at Winning Business Radio, or drop me a note, kevin@winningbusinessradio.com. Our company, Winning Incorporated, we develop sales teams into high achievers and sales leaders into true coaches and mentors. Thank you to crack engineer Rebel Medler. Tune in again next Monday, January 13th, 2020 at 4 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be old friend Walker McKay, principal and founder of No BS Sales School in Columbia, South Carolina. Until then, this is Kevin Hallinan.
You've been listening to Winning Business Radio with your host, Kevin Hallinan. If you missed any part of this episode, the podcast is available on Talk 4 Podcasting and iHeartRadio. For more information and questions, go to winningbusinessradio.com or check us out on social media. Tune in again next week and every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time to listen live to Winning Business Radio on W4CY Radio, W4CY.com. Until then, let's succeed where others have failed and win in business with Kevin Hallinan and Winning Business Radio.